Well, good day. It is not really good morning, but I had a couple things come up today that were a little bit unavoidable. So our morning Bible study is actually our afternoon Bible study today. So I hope you'll forgive me for having this a little bit later than normal. But we are continuing through our study of 2 Samuel, and particularly looking at David's downfall, looking at David going from being king to being in exile to, again, he will be restored to king. Spoiler alert, you know, Absalom loses. David does become king again. But it is significant to look at what happens to David as he is on the run, while he is trying to save his life, while he's trying to save the life of his family. And like I said several times yesterday, and I'll continue to say this, I really don't think David wanted a civil war. I think David was hoping that, you know, this thing would burn itself out, that he would go into exile, and there would be reconciliation between he and Absalom. Of course, that didn't happen, but I think that's what David is hoping for. Well, we begin in chapter 16, and actually 16 is divided quite interestingly. In the Net Bible, they put this into two different, at least three pericopes. There's David in Ziba, there's David in Shimei, and then there's the advice of Ahithophel. So chapter 16 is divided into those sections, which is actually interesting because the Net Bible divides it, obviously, into three pericopes, but the Hebrew text does not. The Hebrew text, if we were to look at that carefully, we would see that the Hebrew text makes a pericope break at the end of verse 13, right after the end of verse 13, before verse 14, which is an interesting place to put that paragraph break. The king and all of his people who were with him were exhausted and at their destination where David refreshed himself. And then we begin with the story of Ahithophel, but the Hebrew text breaks it between verses 13 and 14, whereas the English here breaks it between verses 14 and 15 and also separates verses 4 and 5. The Hebrew text, though, thinks that we should treat verses 1 all the way through 14 as one pericope, and that's what we're going to do. So why don't you go ahead and take your Bibles or whatever you got, go ahead and read verses 1 through 14, and then unpause your audio, because you'll have to pause your audio to do this, because I talk too fast. Unpause your audio, and then we're going to go through the text together. Okay, so remember just a brief review of where we are. David is fleeing for his life. He is on the run, and he's got the people who are loyal to him following him, but he's also just sent Hushai the Archite back to go and pretend to be willing to serve Absalom, but he's there to frustrate the advice of Ahithophel and make sure that Absalom does things that are going to ultimately be for his own good. And then he is supposed to give information to Ahimeaz, the son of Zadok, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar, or however you want to pronounce that. Those two men were high important priests in Israel. So with that on that taken care of, David goes his short way, and Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, was there to meet him. Okay, now this story is interesting. This doesn't seem significant, but it's interesting. So David is going, and Ziba, remember, we weren't really sure if Ziba was a good guy or not. He's just kind of there. He's kind of a blank slate there, and he's kind of a stand-in character. Well, now we see that Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, was there to meet him. He had a couple donkeys that were saddled, and on them were 200 loaves of bread, 100 raisin cakes, 100 baskets of summer fruit, and a container of wine. And the king asked Ziba, "Why did you bring these?" And Ziba says, "The donkeys are for the king's family to ride on. The loaves of bread and the summer fruit are for the attendants to eat, and the wine is for those who get exhausted in the desert." And the king said, "Where's your master's grandson?" And Ziba replied to the king, "He remains in Jerusalem, for he said, 'Today the house of Israel will give back to me my grandfather's kingdom.'" The king said to Ziba, "Everything that was Mephibosheth's now belongs to you." Ziba replied, "I bow before you. May I find favor in your sight, my lord the king." Okay, so just to be aware, just remember, Mephibosheth is a cripple. Okay, he is not really able to saddle and get on his own donkey. He has been eating at the king's table for quite an extended period of time, and he does not go out with Ziba, with his servant. Why not? well, according to Ziba, it's because Mephibosheth says that everything's gonna fall apart for the House of David. People are gonna turn against Absalom, and then I'm gonna get my kingdom back. And that's all David knows. And David says, you know, whatever was Mephibosheth's now belongs to you. And Ziba says, I bow before you. May I find favor in your sight, my lord the king. Ziba actually did something like showing great kindness for David. He didn't have to do it. He went out and showed great kindness to David. And David wants to reward that kindness. And David is not really in a position to know whether exactly what Ziba says is true or not. But he has to take people at their word. That's kind of the problem of being in exile, is you don't have the security to stop and cross-examine witnesses, especially a witness who's crippled and isn't there. You don't have that opportunity. And so he has to flee. And what this does at this point, now, later we find out that Ziba was lying. Okay, so spoiler alert, Ziba was lying, or at least the text intends us to believe that Ziba was lying and that Mephibosheth is suffering at the hands of this wicked servant Ziba. But David doesn't know that. All David knows is that everyone is against him. Everyone is against him. This person to whom he showed immense and massive kindness is now betraying him, is actively at least hoping for, if not plotting for, his downfall. David, I mean, we can read this all over the Psalms, these emotions that David had were people who he thought were his friends, people with whom he enjoyed sweet fellowship going to the temple. These people have now lifted up their heel against him. Mephibosheth, a person he treated as his own son. Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, to whom David swore eternal peace. The person that he took from obscurity and sat at the king's table. Now this man is lifting up his heel against him, trying to plot his downfall. The betrayal that David feels has to be monumental, but, doesn't David deserve this? Think about it. Doesn't David deserve this? What did he do to his friend Uriah the Hittite, one of the mighty men, one of David's personal bodyguards, somebody he knew? Wasn't David a friend of Uriah? And what did David do? He slept with his wife, tried to get him drunk and get him to believe that the son that, or the child, I should say, that David fathered on his wife was his, and then sends him off to be killed in a brutal betrayal. Isn't David getting exactly what he deserved? See, that's the problem. That's the problem with justice. Is that we love justice when it's somebody else getting justice. We really don't like justice when it's out for us. Because none of us really want to get what we deserve. None of us do. We are very, very happy to not get what we deserve. Because what David deserves is exactly what's coming to him. Exactly what's coming to him. Short of his death, David is getting exactly what is coming to him. And God tells him. God told him through the prophet Nathan, this is how you're going to be punished. I'm going to punish you in this way. You will be betrayed by members of your own house, people who love you, people you love. They will betray you, and you will lose four children. You will have to pay four times over for what you did to Uriah. And David has to live through that. What we're watching is a tragedy on an epic scale. Now, David does not fall utterly and completely like some of the other great tragedies of history. David does die an old man in his bed watching his son ascend the throne. And that's good. And that's the hopeful tinge of grace that we have in this. And David doesn't lose his own life. Again, there's that calling, that effectual calling, that sovereign divine election, that God's calling and gift are irrevocable, if you want to pronounce it that way. God has called David to be king, and he has saved him by his grace and his faith, by grace through David's faith. And David's call to salvation is irrevocable. But David is going to have to suffer for what he's done. God doesn't spank the neighbor's kids. He spanks his own kids. It's just like the New Testament says, you know, everybody undergoes discipline. If you don't undergo discipline from your father, it's because you're a bastard and he doesn't care about you. If you don't undergo the discipline of God, something's wrong. You're not a child of God. You're a child of the devil who thinks that you're a child of God. If you don't experience God's discipline, or you're perfect, it's one of the two. Either you're not truly a child of God, or you're perfect, and you don't warrant any discipline. But see, that's wrong too, because discipline isn't always about punishment, and that's something I've preached many, many times. Discipline is not always about punishment. Discipline is about child rearing. It's about forming a personality. And so you would not only have to be perfect in the sense that you never sinned, but you would have to be perfect in the sense that you were completely fulfilled and you have achieved absolute sanctification. You've reached sainthood. I don't know anybody who's done that. And I mean, apart from Jesus, but nobody's done that. David is getting what he deserves, and it's frightful. Now, we see when the king reached Bahurim, there a man from Saul's extended family named Shimei, the son of Gera, came out shouting curses as he approached. And this, of course, is a pretty famous text when we look at Shimei. He's throwing stones at David and all of King David's servants, as well as the people and the soldiers who were around him. And he was yelling curses, and Shimei says, get out, leave, you bloody man of bloodshed, you wicked man. The Lord has punished you for all the spilled blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you rule. Now the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. Disaster has overtaken you, for you are a man of bloodshed. Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and cut off his head. But the king said, and again, we've seen this refrain before. What do we have in common, you sons of Zeruiah? Now listen to what David says. This is really, really insightful into the character and personality of David. If he curses because Yahweh has said to him, curse David, who can say to him, why have you done this? Then David said to Abishai and to his servants, my own son, my own flesh and blood is trying to take my life. So also now is this Benjamite. Leave him alone so that he can curse. For the Lord has spoken to him. Perhaps the Lord will notice my affliction. And this day grant me good in place of his curse. This is a really hard passage to make sense of. Because David says, perhaps God sent Shimei to curse. Perhaps he didn't. I don't know. But what we do know is that what he was doing is warrants the death penalty in the ancient world. In God's law, to curse the ruler of your people is to receive the death penalty. I mean, that is in the law of God. You cannot curse the ruler of your people, the prince of your people. Not only is he cursing them, he's chucking stones at them and his family. And Abishai is right. Abishai is right. He's like, he's breaking the law. This is a death penalty case. We don't need a trial. You're the king. We have witnesses. Let me cut off his head. And David says, what do we have in common, you sons of Zeruiah? He's saying to Abishai, this, remember, Abishai wanted to kill Saul, remember? And David wouldn't let him. Abishai was the one who sneaked into Saul's temple, or Saul's tent, with David to steal his spear and water jug. And he says, how are we even related? Like, how are we even related? If he curses because Yahweh has said curse David, then who can say to him, why have you done this? Well, what is David getting at? Well, David explains what he means. When David says, maybe God is telling him to curse me, what is he saying? He explains it. He says, look, my kid is trying to kill my life, is trying to kill me. My own son is trying to take my life. So why not? Why not this son of Benjamin? Leave him alone. Let him curse. For the Lord has spoken to him. And perhaps the Lord will notice my affliction and this day grant me good in place of his curse. That is really hard to sort out. Really hard to sort out. But what David is saying is, God is, I think we have to read through the lines here. God is punishing me for what I've done, and God has raised up enemies against me. And instead of seeking revenge, instead of seeking to win in my own power, I'm going to put this into the hands of God. And maybe God, because I refuse to take vengeance, because I refuse to attack this man for fulfilling what God has said to curse me, maybe God will show me kindness. See, what's going on? David is getting exactly what he deserves. What does David deserve? David deserved to die for what he did to Uriah. What does Shimei deserve? He deserves to die because of what he did to David. David is saying, I'm not going to give death to the person who deserves it in the hopes that God will also have mercy on me. I'm going to show mercy in the anticipation that God will show mercy to me. Now, does David say that in so many words? No. Is it kind of difficult to get from here to there? Yeah, it is. That's a complicated, interpretation I just made. And you can disagree with it, obviously. You know, anybody can disagree with me about anything if they really want to. But the point remains, David is saying, I am not going to take vengeance. I'm not going to seek justice right now. I'm just going to seek mercy. And maybe the Lord will notice how I'm suffering and grant me good in place of this curse, in place of Shimei's curse. And so David and his men went on their way. But Shimei kept going along the side of the hill opposite him, yelling curses as he threw stones and dirt at them. And the king and all of his people who arrived exhausted at their destination, where David refreshed himself. So David is going along this path, and this guy is up on a hill cursing him, chucking rocks at him, chucking dirt at him, cursing him, cursing his family. And David says, I'm just gonna put my head down and bull through this and just take it. Because maybe God will bless me for being cursed. Now, we see that in the New Testament. We see this in David's life. We see David receives forgiveness, but we also see that Jesus is going to say, blessed are those who are cursed. Now, David is not being cursed in this sense. David is not facing opposition because David was good, but because he did evil and he's facing the vengeance of God, the justice of God, I should say. But there's a good reminder to us that just because we face opposition, just because we face cursing, just because we face slander or persecution, doesn't mean that we ought to seek vengeance, seek justice. Jesus says, blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you on account of me. Because that, in the same way, they treated the prophets who were before you. Jesus says, if the master of the house is called Beelzebub, how much more the members of his household? Jesus says, if they persecuted me, they will persecute you. If they curse me, they'll curse you. If they treat me evilly, they will treat you evilly as well. Jesus is telling his disciples, and this is something that we as Christians need to be prepared for. We as Christians need to be prepared to face opposition, to face persecution, to face cursing on account of Christ and on account of our Christian witness. This is something that's important. Now, is David facing a curse because he did something good? No. No, that's not the case here. But David understands that if he wants to receive mercy instead of justice, he needs to show mercy instead of justice. And that's a lesson that we all need to learn. We all need to learn that instead of just seeking justice, instead of trying to get our vengeance, we can trust that vengeance is the Lord's, that he will be able to effectively bring justice just as well, if not infinitely better than we can. Anyways, that's all we have for today. I hope you've enjoyed this Bible study, and we will be happily together tomorrow morning. Thank you. God bless. Bye.